The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 304. Richard O'Link, Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous 1995. Wow, 95. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at Weaver's and pick up some great Mayberry items. It's that time of year. When I'm recording this, it's November. It's time to start getting some Christmas presents or birthday presents for your favorite podcast host. Because December's the month. Head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. Thank all of you for your support that have ever donated to the show. I'm Alan Newsom, your host of Two Chairs No Waiting, and it is a pleasure to have you here to talk about the Andy Griffith Show. Yay! Our favorite show. Or, you know, you wouldn't be listening to this, I suppose, if it's not your favorite show. And if you are, then I guess you're fixing to stop because this is about the Andy Griffith Show. And today, what we're going to be listening to, or tonight, whenever you're listening to it, we're going to be talking with Richard O'Link. Now, Richard Link was Andy Griffith's manager. He was Andy Griffith's. He was Maggie Peterson's, Ronnie Schell. I think Jim Nabors as well. He was several of the cast members' manager. And he knows a lot about the Andy Griffith Show. Now, this was recorded up at Bob Scheib's recreation of Wally's service station at the Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous. Now, in the past, we've done several episodes about this particular event where we had... We had Keith. He was interviewed back on episode number, 295, Keith Thibodeau. That's Johnny Paul, Opie's buddy. And then we had Maggie Peterson and Hoke Howe. We had two episodes with them. So basically 295 through 297 were from the Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous 1995. And then we did some Mayberry Days reports and then headed into the 300th episode. So we got interrupted. So now we're heading back to 1995 to talk to Richard Link. Now, Richard, as I said, was the manager of Andy Griffith. Now, as the manager, he was also executive producer on several things with Andy. He the Return to Mayberry movie, he was executive producer. The Deadly Game, Andy's movie that he was in back in 77, he was executive producer of that. And The Girl in the Empty Grave, you'll remember that. Winter Kill, another one. And there was a TV series called Adams of Eagle Lake. And I believe that was kind of a related to those movies there, like Winter Kill. He did Mayberry RFD. He was executive producer of it. The Jim Nabors Hour. He was executive producer of that show that ran from 1969 to 71. And then he was the new Andy Griffith Show, Headmaster, Andy Griffith Show, Don Knotts, Jim Nabors Show, which was that was a special that he was executive producer, and of course the Andy Griffith Show and Matlock. So you're going to hear some questions asked that Richard knows the answer to, and there's some that that he's not going to know the answer to. So I just want you to realize I've had a lot of people over the years say, "Hey, have you asked so and so? You know, if they know what happened on this?" Well, believe me, over the years, we have asked every one of the cast members and crew members about just about every question you can think of. So, as you're going to hear, even Richard Link, who is executive producer of all these shows, he doesn't know everything about what happened. So, let's go on over there. This is a fairly long interview. So, let's take it away, guys, and take you back to 1995.
Personal manager to Andy Griffith, of course, one of the executive producers of the show. knows everything there is to know about Andy Griffith.
What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode? I think it was, we've done so many. And I also think there may be one of Andy's favorites. The one with Don Knotts. I think it was our second episode. Huh?
Manhunt.
Manhunt.
Right.
Yes. That was the one that really told us who the comedian was going to be on the show.
And Andy never felt at any time that he didn't want to be the comedian. He wanted to be the straight man, didn't he?
Well, not exactly. When we signed up, actually Andy was not only a big owner of the show, but the star of the show. So we assumed Andy would be the comedian of the show. But the chemistry with Don and Andy was so great that after that second show, Andy knew immediately that he was going to be destined to be the straight man. That's how that actually happened.
One of the most asked questions about the Griffith Show is, why did Andy's voice change from the southern drawl to the more... Do you have any idea? I mean, was that done on purpose?
It was a big draw in the beginning. And gradually, you know, you go to different places and you learn different things and you're no longer... I don't want to sound critical, but you're no longer of a really rural country boy. Like, you know, it was a country-based show, but when a guy like Andy, and I used to kid him about it, when you're successful and you travel around the country, and you travel first class in an airplane, and you put on your first tuxedo, and you start mingling, you have to change. Basically, you're the same, and your whole image, including speech, will change. Everybody changes but me. I'll never get rid of this New Jersey accent, so I don't care how old I'll get. It's impossible.
Well, now let's talk a minute. Of course, you were on the set of the Andy Griffith Show pretty much every time they were shooting. Give us an idea of, like, the courthouse. I know in a lot of episodes you look out the door of the courthouse. Was it fake? I mean, was there a backdrop? What exactly was outside of the courthouse?
Outside of the courthouse? I'm trying to think now. God, that's a long time ago.
Was it basically just a stage?
Some of them were stairs. Some of it was set to make it look real, and some of it was not real, behind or in front, no. And it depended upon where we shot. Now, we shot at Desilu Studio on stage. Naturally, a lot of it was fake. But if we went out into the Culver City, which is where 20th Century Fox, we used to use their back lot, a lot of that was more expansive. And even that, the homes looked real outside, but inside, you know, there wasn't really anything new.
I know a lot of viewers of the Griffith Show, if you'll notice, if you're watching Andy Griffith, you never get to see the wall behind the stove. When Aunt B goes to the stove, that wall... So obviously, the walls were movable. They could move them out for different shots,
sure.
And all
yeah.
type.
Yeah.
But it gives such an illusion of being an actual house.
Well, like that's the whole idea.
Right.
You know, but you can't go into whole homes, you know?
Right.
Or homes, and you can't do it.
But, I mean, in the people's minds who watch the show,
well, sure.
It seems like such a real house, a real courthouse, the whole thing.
Yeah, but Dennis, remember, and I think a lot of us forget when we get analyzing it too critical, our whole industry, the whole entertainment industry, especially motion pictures and television, let's face it, it's fantasy land. We think it's real, I mean, out here. And we like to believe it's real, but it isn't really real, you know? It's what I call, when I teach a course in entertainment public relations at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, which is now my hometown. Thank you. And try to teach the students, give them the entire scope of what I learned over 50 years. And when I introduce myself, I tell them, you have other professors in the journalism department who are the real professors, R-E-A-L, and I am the other professor, the real professor, R-E-E-L. So expand that into your lives. We're talking about REEM.
Right.
We love to believe it's for real. And I'd love to look in the mirror every morning and see Cary Grant, but for 50 years now, I haven't seen Cary Grant. So.
If anybody has any questions for Mr. Link, we'll get right to those.
Andy's pants legs, one of them was up all the time, the other one's down. Was that just by accident, or was that on purpose?
His pants? God, you're observant. I've been with him.
Well, one's always on top of the boot.
Yeah, I don't know if that was, you know. Yeah, are you talking to Andy Griffith Show? I can't answer that. I don't know why it would be on purpose, you know. Maybe it's, you know, the way Andy carries himself physically. But I really don't know about that, no.
Another question, Mr. Link.
Are you married?
Am I married? Yes, I am married to that lovely 6'1" lady that's been roaming around. Her name is I'm married. Bettina Link, Bettina Brenner Link, who was also a former showgirl and actress, and a real bona fide. She was born right in the heart of Hollywood, went to UCLA, went into show business. I met her in Las Vegas. We've been married several times, and we have 3 children, 2 in college on the West Coast, and 1 just graduated from USC Film School. So, yes, we are. And I can't afford another divorce, so I'm set.
Yes, I was wanting to ask, in some of the earlier episodes with Barney, his badge is wore directly over the center of his pocket, but later on in the series, his badge is moved closer to the where he buttons his shirt up. Was that done for any purpose? Or was it because he was so small, or was that?
No, that as far as best of my knowledge, I don't want to be the perfect expert here. Those little, you know, things happen, like with Andy's pants, the gentleman that just brought that up. You know, they try to match everything right perfect, you know.
Well, Dick, I think one of the reasons people ask that type of question is because if you're watching Matlock, I know, didn't they stitch Matlock's suit to make it look sloppy? Indeed, that was done.
Yeah, that's quite a question. In the beginning, that seersucker coat, that caused a lot of commotion, a lot of problems in the beginning. I didn't like it personally, and I didn't want it, and I tried Andy to get them to do something else, but for some reason the coat became almost as big as Andy Griffith, and the public loved it, that look, that image. I agree with you, Dennis, that it has a sloppy look, but that's what they like, and it works. And if something works, you don't change it.
Mr. Link, Marvin Murphy from Florida. I brought one of the cars up here today. A lot of people ask me about the cars used on the show. Can you give me some history of the cars?
Cars? No, the car, you mean what, the squad cars? No, our squad cars, you know, we had a small town and, you know, police department, and they were just, you know, put together, that's all. I can't give you any knowledge about that.
Where did you get them? Did you get them from the Ford company? Did they give you a new one every year? What happened to the cars when they were through with them? That type of thing.
Which cars are you speaking of?
The cars used on the shore for the squad.
Oh, you mean like Ford and?
Yes.
We had a deal. We made a deal in the beginning with Ford, and we'd get new cars every year for the use of the cars in the shows. And then later on, I happened to get into it and made a deal with Chrysler. And we used Chrysler products for a few years. And yes, Andy Griffith, Aaron Rubin, myself, would get a new car each year. Yes.
What happened to the show? What would they do with that?
Well, everything went back to the manufacturer.
I see. There's not a lot anywhere.
Or we had the choice to buy them if we wanted, yes.
Okay. An interesting question that someone brought up. If you'll notice on the Andy Griffith Show, the squad cars have no shine to them. It's like they were painted with flat paint. Is there any idea? I mean, were they just dirty? What?
That could have been, I can't, that could have been for photography purposes alone. You know, there's so many elements that go into producing a show, from acting to technical, you know, technical problems. Who knows? You know?
Back then, you had a lot of actors that were actually appearing on the show as two, three, four different people. I remember the original show, Aunt B was not Aunt B. She was a neighbor lady or a towns lady whose husband had passed away. And that was, I think, the one with Danny Thomas premiering. And then Clara Johnson and Clara Edwards was the same person with two different names. Ernest T. And also the fella that always liked to beat up Barney, the fella that he was afraid to fight. And later was, I guess, on the Brady Bunch as Sam the Butcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there any reason that you had the same people doing two or three different parts that, you know, you just liked the way they acted?
No, with Aunt B, you know, once we started the Andy Griffith Show, she was on the first show, if you recall. She was Aunt B once she started with the Andy Griffith Show. And then, you know, when you put a television show together, a series, you really don't know what's going to happen. And by trial and error, you try different people and see how they'll fit in to the show. We went through the same growing process, and after the first year, you make changes and things begin to gel or fall apart. Well, not with us. We were lucky. The show gelled, and we had a very happy cast and family. I'm telling you, Andy used to love to go to work every morning. And these things evolve out of trial and error. You try your best, you know, doesn't always work. You make changes and you work around. And then when you find the right formula, you stay with it. And then if someone leaves, like Don Knotts did, after the fifth year, you have problems. So we thought we were going to have problems. And you panic because you don't find another Don Knotts. It's impossible. But we were lucky. Don went into a variety type show. I think it was over at CBS. And this is a very interesting story, and it's going to be hard for everybody here to believe. And Andy and I were concerned. Would you believe that the last 3 years, without Don Knotts, don't ask me why, our ratings went up. And they were as good, if not better, because the very last episode we shot in 1968, you couldn't have planned it any better. The National Nielsen ratings came out the last day of filming, and we were number one. So what can I tell you?
In the movie Return to Mayberry, why was the Dud Walsh character left out and Ernest T. kind of chasing Charlene again?
Dennis, would you repeat that?
In the movie Return to Mayberry, shot in 86,
you're talking about the reunion?
Yeah, the reunion movie. Why wasn't Hoke Howell used as Dud Walsh? Why were a lot of the characters left out?
Well, good question, and I'll tell you, we started out with the good intent. Let's bring all these people back after a great amount of, you know, time away. Well, I don't know if any of you ever tried to put your own family together after 10 years or what and bring them back for Christmas or Easter. It was not only difficult, they all had their own lives by that time. Most of them were doing very well financially. Some were not available, and it was a nightmare. And how we ever pulled this off and had that great rating, I'll never know. I was partly responsible because I was co-executive producer, and it was a big undertaking. And I think we were up in a little town, Los Olivos, north of Santa Barbara, where we shot that film for 3 or 4 weeks. And it was tough, but it was worth it, and it worked. But to answer your question, you can't predict. Some are available. We for a while thought we wouldn't get Jim Nabors to come back, which was a vital part of the show. It was a nip and tuck affair.
Okay, that's all the time we have for Richard, and Richard is going to be over in the green and white tent.
All right, so there we are. That was Richard Link, executive producer of the Andy Griffith Show, Andy's manager, all kinds of stuff like that. So I hope you enjoyed that. Now, as you heard, now this is a guy very involved with the Andy Griffith Show and other shows, and he didn't know a lot of these things that we as Mayberry fans just fixate on. Like, for instance, Andy's pant leg getting stuck in the top of his boot. And he didn't know why that is. Now, of course, over the years, we've heard the story that it was because, you know, Andy, it happened naturally. When Andy would sit down, his pant leg would go up, and when he stood up, it would get stuck on the top of his boot. And I'd heard stories before that Andy's father, that happened to him a lot, and Andy's dad didn't worry about it because that's just what happened. And so Andy left it that way on the show for realism. It just made it more real. But Dick didn't know that. That's Richard Link didn't. He talked about his wife, Bettina Link. They were married, and I want to say it was in 80. I can't remember. Anyway, they were married again, and they had been married twice. So they were married the first time in 1971, 72. They were married for a while, then they got divorced, and then they got remarried in the 80s. And they've been married ever since. They had three children as well. Let's see. He talked about that. He talked about Barney's badge. Why did Barney's badge move from one position on his shirt to another? You know, we focus again on things like this because we're so interested in the Andy Griffith Show. Now, I think you may have heard from the way he was talking, you know, to some degree, and I don't want to not burst in anybody's bubble, but to some degree, the actors and the producers and the folks like that, the Andy Griffith Show was a job. It was work. And they did their best to make things consistent. But, you know, moving Barney's badge because it looked a little better on camera from one spot to the other, nobody thought much about it. You know, hey, this looks better. Let's put it here. They didn't make a big story about it. And he doesn't remember why that was the case because little changes are made all the time. Now, you know, honestly, that's true in life, too. You ever wear a name tag or a badge that you wear around your neck or something, and eventually you get a different chain or a different thing, or you decide to put the badge a little further to the right or to the left, so it's in the pocket. We do the same thing. So to them, that wasn't something they actually thought about. He also was asked about the squad cars, and he didn't really know too much about that, what happened to them each year, other than that he said they returned them to the dealer or to the manufacturers at the end of the year, had an option to buy them, but they basically always returned them. And he talked about, he didn't really have an answer for the actors appearing as many different characters. He talked about Alan Melvin, who was Sam the Butcher on the Brady Bunch, if you watched that. And of course, he was several characters on the Andy Griffith Show. But he didn't really answer why that those actors are, you know, put back into the show. You got to remember, back in the day when this was actually being shot, there were no VCRs. People didn't watch things over and over and over. You know, there weren't that many channels, so they didn't have a lot of reruns. So that's the reason I think they used the same actors. They were good actors. And when a role came up that they would be good in, they put them in that role and shot a new show. Because it's been a year. Who's going to remember this guy that was in one scene a year ago or even 8 months ago, 6 months ago? Who's going to remember? Nobody. But us who watch it on DVD because we have copies ourselves, or who watch it on, I don't know, TV Land or your local channel. It comes on every day, two or three or four times. And we see maybe an episode that came on a year and a half apart, we see them within a week. So we remember, you know, because we see 10, 20 episodes maybe. So that's a half a year of shots of shows because there were, what, about 30 episodes a year, you know, somewhere in those ranges. You know, so, you know, they had, you know, they were a long time apart for them. So anyway, I just thought it was very interesting to hear the producer, the manager, talking about, how these things actually occurred, how they thought about them back when they were actually doing the series. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, answers, whatever you'd like, you can email me at floyd@imayberry.com. You can call me at 888-684-8415. And one more thing I'd like to ask you to do. You can head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochairs. Now, I don't ever ask you guys to do this kind of stuff, but if there are episodes of the podcast that you really like, head over to Facebook and head over to the Facebook page. And when you see one that you really like if you liked episode, 303 that came on last week, share it on your Facebook page. Click the share button so that you can share the page and share it with your friends. How about that? We'll see if that helps us get more people involved in knowing about the podcast, because it still amazes me how many Mayberry fans don't know about this podcast or don't know about imayberry.com even. We're not doing a very good job of getting the word out about our favorite show, and we need to do a little bit better job. Not this show, but the Andy Griffith Show is what I'm talking about. We need to make sure that people that don't know about some of these things know where they can go and have a little bit of Mayberry fun. So anyway, I want to encourage you guys to do that. Head over to Facebook, if you're on Facebook, and click the share button on episodes that you like. If you don't really like it, don't share it. If it's not a good one, don't share it. But if you do like it, go ahead and get it shared. All right, folks, until next time, I hope you have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you then here on Two Chairs, No Waiting, your Mayberry podcast. Good night, everybody.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.